We do have a quorum. People have checked in. First item on the agenda, the clerk will note the role of people as they enter as well. And would you people make sure that their cell phones are turned off, I believe? We don't want to have the interference if we can help that. Representative Greiling, would you be so kind as to move the minutes of April 30th?
Mr. Chair, I move the minutes of April 30th.
Minutes are moved. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And carried. Representative Mahoney. Thank you.
Probably worse than
the chair would move that House File 72 be recommended to pass. Well, Senate File, I'm sorry, 167 be recommended to pass and placed on the general registry. Representative Mahoney, I notice there's an amendment in the packet. You want that moved first before you explain
it? If you could, Mr. Chair.
The chair would move Amendment A-07-0915. Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. This amendment is on page 119, line 16. It goes in what we've normally done with extended benefits. This concerns the Ainsworth Lumber Company and the extended benefits for their members, their employees that were laid off. What we're doing is changing it from charging them against their rating to not charging them against their rating. It's pretty standard. It's what we've always done with extended benefits. We rarely ever charge anyone.
Okay, we have the amendment before us, and the new fiscal note that's in your packet reflects that as well. So it is a fiscal implication. Those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And carried. Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair and committee members, the reason I brought this bill in front of your committee is on page 16, and it starts at line 16, I'm sorry, page 16, line 14. The department is putting more money into fraud investigation and changing the penalty for fraud investigation. I'll just read it. In addition, the commissioner shall assess a penalty equal to 40% of the amount fraudulently obtained. Then you drop down to line 30 on the same page, where it says 62% of the payments towards the penalty are credited to the contingency account and 37.5% credit to the administration. What that does is, because of enhanced enforcement, they expect to collect more penalties. Because of collection of more penalties, the fiscal note on page 5 deals with that, says it's $200,000 will come to the general fund. And members of the committee, that is the ways and means part.
Questions? Any questions? Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Mahoney, I'm just trying to figure out, and Mr. Chair, maybe this is a question for you. Is it not in the purview of this committee to discuss all the financial implications of this bill?
Sure.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Mahoney, I've been contacted. I have a number of the airlines folks in my district. Does this bill deal with their question of their unemployment insurance and their coverage on whether or not they continue to fill out their paperwork?
Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair and Representative McNamara, this bill, I can't remember the page and the line, but one for the other members of the committee. When the mechanics went on strike against Northwest, they claimed to be locked out. They filed for unemployment. Northwest appealed. Part of your unemployment is you're supposed to either show up or call in, primarily call in, every couple of weeks, I think it is. What was happening was they were being told at the time, you don't qualify. I don't remember the exact number of them. I'm sure Mr. Nelson has it if you need it. A good number of them got fairly discouraged and stopped calling in. And because of that, they became disqualified truly. And they went to court, and the ALG ruled in their favor that there was a lockout. This bill fixes that particular problem for the 250 or 400 members that got discouraged and quit calling. They are made whole, essentially. So it is in this bill.
Representative Mahoney, or McNamara.
Well, we're both Irishmen.
Is that good or bad?
brotherhood.
That would depend on your perspective. Representative Mahoney, so that I do understand it, it will allow these folks that quit filling out their paperwork to circumnavigate that intent of the law. I mean, these folks are good folks, and I just recently learned, I didn't realize, that they actually had been advised to keep filling out their paperwork, but sometimes, unfortunately, they didn't keep doing that. Some of them, I think, got some different information. But I was never under the understanding, and I believe this was your amendment, I always thought that this was going to be back charged to Northwest Airlines. Is the amendment now transferring this obligation to all the business folks and everybody, or is this obligation going to be on the experience mod of Northwest Airlines?
Representative Mahoney?
Mr. Chair, I'm going to call up Lee Nelson from the department to answer that question.
Representative Mahoney, I think the one that is just specifically for Ainsworth, the back charge, but I don't know that for sure. Mr. Nelson, you want to come up and clarify that particular? Yes.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I am Lee Nelson. I am the Director of Legal Affairs for the Unemployment Insurance Program. Mr. Chairman, Representative McNamara, the amendment goes strictly to Ainsworth Lumber and extra unemployment benefits for Ainsworth Lumber. That's what the amendment did. Representative McNamara, as to your question on the effect of Northwest Airlines, the particular bill, those people who did not file every 2 weeks, those were for regular benefits, and back filings would be required to be accepted. And those benefits would be charged to Northwest Airlines experience rating. The bill also does provide for an extension for Northwest. Extended benefits are not charged to the experience rating. So Ainsworth matches up with the Northwest Airlines.
Hey, Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the regular benefits, their first 26 weeks, will be charged to Northwest Airlines like it normally would. Would they then... I'm assuming this bill allows them to qualify for a 50% extension to 39 weeks. Would that then be under the whole purview of everyone, or is that also goes on at Northwest Experience Mod?
Mr. Nelson?
Mr. Chairman, Representative McNamara, the bill provides for 26 weeks of additional benefits for Northwest Airlines folks, and that would be... We call it socialized costs, spread across all employers. The extra benefits.
Is the McNamara follow up?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. So it's a 100% extension. It's not the way I remember it. A lot of them historically have been a 50%. So this is a 100% extension from 26 weeks to 52 weeks. The first half, Northwest Airlines will bear the brunt of that, or will bear that expense in their experience mod. Based on the fact that it was determined that it wasn't a conventional strike, which I agree with. I don't think it was a conventional strike when you ask somebody to take a 40% pay cut. But I also think folks have an obligation to abide by the way the rules work. My concern is what's the precedent we're setting here now? If I remember right, I think there was only one other time in the history of this state, and I think it was the Hormel strike when a similar situation is. Am I true in that?
Mr. Nelson?
Mr. Chairman, Representative McNamara, there never has been a legislation to accept these back filing of, we call them, continued requests. There never has been similar legislation.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Nelson, but was it just a court's determined in the Hormel? Because I thought there was some precedent. When the mechanics and different airlines employees that live in my district used to call me, they said, well, there is precedence, Denny, that Hormel went on strike, but was that just a judge ruled that it was different and it didn't take legislative action?
Mr. Nelson?
Mr. Chairman, Representative McNamara, it actually wasn't the Hormel case. It was a case, there is a case in Minnesota, which I was actually involved in 1974, I was involved in, involving Uhlendorf versus Sunstar Foods. Sunstar Foods was the meat packing company. And in that particular case, the department awarded benefits, and then the Supreme Court affirmed the award of benefits to those individuals. So they had been granted benefits. The Northwest Airlines case was a little different. It's fairly complicated, but the unemployment law judge had awarded benefits to a certain portion of the Northwest Airlines folks, the custodians and cleaners, and had denied benefits to the higher paid, much higher paid individuals, the technicians and inspectors. The Minnesota Court of Appeals affirmed the award of benefits to the custodians and cleaners and reversed the denial on the technicians and inspectors. That's
thank you, Mr. Chair. My last follow-up. Mr. Nelson, in the one in 1974, I guess I had the wrong meatpacking firm, was there folks that did not continue to apply, or we might have had a different process at that time, or maybe we didn't require, but did we have a situation where we went back and at that time did some folks that weren't doing whatever they were supposed to do back then, you probably had to go into the office? What happened there? Is there any similarity between that and our current situation with Northwest Airlines?
Mr. Nelson?
Mr. Chairman, Representative McNamara, there is no similarity. That was not a problem in the Sunstar Foods case.
Representative Swigum.
I said it was not a one, but a quick follow-up to that.
I was taking you at your word.
Yeah, but I'm not sure I understand your answer. Was because in that case all the folks had been applying, or why was it not the same as in the Northwest Airlines case here?
Mr. Nelson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative McNamara, the individuals in that particular case didn't stop coming in every 2 weeks, whether it was by phone or in person.
Okay.
This case is unique in that respect.
Representative Swigum?
Mr. Chairman, neither Mr. Nelson or Representative Mahoney, the extension of benefits of 26 weeks is an unusual thing to do. Usually my memory sits correctly, takes place when we maybe have a severe unemployment rate within the state or within the country or something that is really out of whack out there in the economy. Give me your rationale, Mr. Mahoney or Mr. Nelson, for the extension of benefits in this case, other than some policy.
Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair and Representative Swigum. My title is representative, it's not Mr. My rationale is that these are working people that needed a hand.
Other questions? Well, Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Were these Northwest Airlines employees, they were not on strike, we're not paying them employment benefits for the period in which they were on strike. Do I understand that correctly?
Mr. Speaker, Mr. Chair, and Representative Earhart, I'm going to defer, but I think it's a legal question there, and the judge made some determination. So
Mr. Nelson, can you clarify that answer?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Earhart, the Minnesota Court of Appeals, as I said, the unemployment law judge awarded benefits to strikers, the custodians and cleaners, and denied the technicians and inspectors. And the Court of Appeals said they should be paid unemployment benefits while on strike, all of them. And what this bill does is those people who stop calling in every 2 weeks, it pays them for that period and provides an extension. But they've already been awarded benefits while on strike.
Okay, other questions at all? Representative Earhart, follow up?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What do you mean they've already been awarded? You mean by the courts? And now we're going to pay them because we're passing legislation? Is that the...
Mr. Chairman, Representative Earhart, right after the court issued a decision, the department paid $9 million in unemployment benefits. Now, a number of people stopped calling in. Many kept calling in every 2 weeks. Many did, and they were all paid. But a few stopped, or I shouldn't say it's a few, a number stopped. They got discouraged because the process took so long. One of the problems was that it takes a long time in the Court of Appeals to get a decision. The court took over 11 months to issue a decision, and that was one of the problems, and they got discouraged and stopped calling in. But the court has said unemployment benefits should be paid to these individuals who meet other requirements, and the problem here was they stopped calling in was the problem.
Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Was that precedent setting when the court said that we are going to pay unemployment benefits to those on strike?
Mr. Nelson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Earhart, no. As I indicated, the Supreme Court had affirmed an award of benefits back in 1974 involving a case of Uhlendorf and Sunstar Foods. Those individuals went on strike after the employer imposed a significant wage cut. And the real issue in the Northwest case, because these individuals were so highly paid, was really a question: if you're a really high-paid worker, is a 25% cut as dramatic as if you're a lower-paid worker? That was the legal issue. The court simply indicated they didn't think the individuals were all that high paid. And so that was really the issue. But the courts have held in Minnesota that if you're given a significant pay cut and you go on strike because of that, that is a constructive lockout and unemployment benefits are payable. And that is not a unique provision only in Minnesota. So it's happened across the nation.
Thank you.
Representative Swagel.
Mr. Chairman, let me see, Mr. Nelson, if I can get a what I would consider a better response to you than Representative Mahoney in regards to need a break. Give me the rationale of extended benefits that we've done from a state standpoint in the past as far as this.
Okay, Mike, can you just use your mic a little bit, Representative Swingham?
Or Mr. Nelson.
Mr. Nelson?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Swigum, the department has opposed this particular extension. So I should say I testified against it at length in a couple of other committees. The rationale I've heard is that because one of the problems here was it took the Court of Appeals a long time to issue a decision, 11 months, but that's the standard length of time, but it took a long time to process these people. Very highly paid. It's very difficult for them to find commensurate employment. That, I believe, is the rationale which has been asserted. The department, I should tell you, has opposed every extension because the department's position is why one particular group? In Minnesota right now, 1,000 people a week are exhausting their unemployment benefits, and why are we picking out one group? And I should say I testified against the LTV extension. I was unfortunately given that task, too. But it's always been our position of why a particular group, they may be no different than their next-door neighbor who didn't happen to work for that particular employer. So, and I say 1,000 people a week are exhausting benefits right now in Minnesota.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Nelson, I want to commend you. You're doing a very good job in a very tough spot here, and I appreciate your being forthright in the information. I have a couple of tough ones here because I've been very much involved in this issue, listening to it, because I must have the most airline mechanics in the district. I think I can't believe how many of these folks that I know and have been very involved talking with them, and one of them just lived two doors away. Am I correct, and I understand that originally I was told that their legal representation from their union had not told them of the need to file every 2 weeks, and then I found out just recently that their union had told them to file every 2 weeks and that there was a need because this could easily be meet the criteria of not what we would call a regular strike and considered a lockout by the courts. Are you aware of that? And then I'm going to ask a follow-up just to warn you what's coming next will be the questions about what Deed did.
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Nelson?
This is a point of clarification.
Yeah.
AMPA is not a union. It's an employment association. It's a big difference.
Okay. Mr. Nelson?
Mr. Chairman, Representative McNamara, I am aware I'm actually involved in a number of cases in the Court of Appeals on this late filing issue. I will tell you that. Yes, it was on the AMPA website to continue to file. I know that the legal counsel stood up in association meetings and told them all to continue to file. It was on the unemployment law judge's decision, continue to file. Each individual received a handbook which told them to keep filing, but they got discouraged, as they say, throughout the process, I think. And some people may well have received not the best information from the department, so they got discouraged.
Mr. Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to follow up on what the comment you just made. They might not have got the best information from the department. Mr. Nelson, I want to say that's the most troubling to me is the revelation I have heard that some of these folks may have called in, or is it even true, and if it was on the website, I'm wondering if we could get a hard copy of it. I've heard that there's a possibility that there may have even been a posting or an email from a Deed employee that may have led some of these folks to not continue to write in or call in every 2 weeks. Is there any truth to those? Some of those rumors that I've heard, or are they not rumors?
Mr. Nelson?
Mr. Chairman, Representative McNamara, I've not heard anything, and I've been involved in a number of these cases, about any emails being sent by any department employees. I should say when people, we have an information line which takes about 880,000 phone calls last year, and people calling, why aren't I being paid? You're being paid because you're denied. Now, if I was talking to one of those individuals, I might say, and your case is under appeal, please keep calling in every 2 weeks. But our people on phones, they're picking one phone call up after another. And sometimes they'll tell you, I'm not saying that they were told, don't bother. I'm not saying that. I don't know necessarily I believe that when people have said it. But they get discouraged by saying, they call in every, how come I'm not getting paid? Because you're under a denial. And I think they just get discouraged. That's what I'm saying about the best advice. In hindsight, you always want to give a long explanation about what you should keep doing. But when you're picking up one phone call after another, you sometimes don't give the best and complete explanation. You answer their question, and you answer it honestly. But sometimes that honest, straight-up answer discourages people and doesn't give them and tell them what they should keep doing. And in hindsight, answer the questions better.
Okay. Any other pressing questions? We have lots of information, I think, that we've gathered today.
Yeah.
And the reason, Representative Swagel.
Mr. Chairman, I did have a follow-up.
Sure, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I apologize for asking many questions.
No, that's okay.
Mr. Nelson, the approximate $10 million in this case of the Mechanics Association or the Ainsworth Lumber $500,000, that extended benefits to socialized costs will then just be spread in the system to all other employers and employees in the state. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Nelson?
Yes, that's correct. It will simply be paid out of the State Unemployment Insurance Trust Fund, and the trust fund currently, I just found out a few minutes ago, has $400 million in it right now. It's just got first quarter receipts. And it will simply be paid out, and all employers pay a minimum tax, if you will, a minimum level of contribution, and it will simply come out of that portion.
And the last question,
Representative Swagel,
Mr. Nelson, do you have Do we not have an unemployment insurance advisory group or advisory committee or advisory council of some type?
Mr. Nelson?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Swigum, yes, we do. Group has endorsed and fully supports unanimously the first six articles of this bill. They have not addressed the Article 7 or Article 8.
They have, Mr. Chairman, they have not endorsed or supported the extension of benefits questions set within the bill.
Mr. Nelson, I thought you said they hadn't taken a position or one way or another. Have they? Can I clarify, have they opposed it? Have they? Are they supportive or are they just not reviewed it or not taken a position?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Swigum, Mr. Chairman, they have not taken a position. We haven't brought the issue to them. They have not met for a number of months. So these issues all came up subsequent.
Okay. Any other burning questions? Thank you very much, Mr. Nelson. Then the chair will renew his motion that Senate File 167, as amended, be recommended to pass and placed in general registry. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
And carried.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee.
Could someone go and get Mr. Huntley? Yeah, let's pass this out. Another page. Pass it. No, this is the last one. Representative Huntley, welcome to the committee. Would you like to move your bill?
Do we have the Senate?
The Senate file is before us, so if you'd like to move Senate File 345.
I'd like to move Senate File 345.
Okay, Representative Huntley moves Senate File 345. Then I believe that being passed out is the House file, and my understanding is you want to insert that language into the Senate. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, members, that's correct. The House language in 655 should be inserted into the Senate Bill 345.
Can you just wait just a second before so we get that passed out as well? And the members, the House research briefing, the bill summary you have is to House File 655, and the author is going to insert House File 655 into that bill. So Representative Huntley, would you move then that delete all amendments, delete everything after the enacted and clause, and insert the language found in House File 655 into Senate File 345. Everyone informed on that? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. And then, Representative Huntley, there's one additional amendment, and it's drafted to the House file, and it's an appropriation type of clarification. The chair would move H0655A15, and Mr. Marks, can you explain that particular appropriation?
Mr. Chair, members, in the Finance Committee, when we heard this bill, we added, because there was no appropriation language, we added a statutory appropriation, which is what's on page 7, lines 31 and 32. After further discussion with the Department of Health, to be consistent with the way they handle other appropriations from the State Government Finance Special Revenue Fund, State Government Special Revenue Fund, this would take out the statutory appropriation and put in a direct appropriation for the for 2 years, for fiscal 2008 and 2009 only. So that's what the language in the amendment does, is to delete the statutory appropriation on page 7 and then add a direct appropriation at the end of the bill on page 12. The dollars in the appropriation are the dollars from the new fiscal note.
And Representative Huntley?
The bill does really not cost any money. What this amendment does, there are fees that will be paid by, number one, by the people that get a permit to use marijuana, and they will pay a fee for that. And in addition to that, there are people that will supply the marijuana to these individuals, and they will have to pay a fee. And this amendment simply allows the Department of Health to take that money that's deposited in the Treasury and spend it for those for monitoring the system.
That's correct. There's no fiscal appropriation to the general fund. We have the amendment before us. All those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Carried. Representative Huntley.
Mr. Chair and members, what this bill does is allow people that have a chronic condition that results in them having severe pain to use marijuana if they get a prescription from a physician. So it's a decision that has to be made both by the patient and by the physician. It's quite clear. There's a number of national studies. The most recent one came out, I believe, in March in the Journal of Neurology, which happens to be published in Minneapolis, that showed it was a study, peer-reviewed, double-blind study on the use of marijuana by AIDS patients that had a very painful condition called peripheral neuropathy, which is very painful. And the results of that one study were quite clear that medical marijuana did alleviate significant amounts of their suffering. There are many other studies that have been published that for other diseases that again show that medical marijuana reduces the pain. In many cases, we're talking about people undergoing chemotherapy for cancer, and one of the results of chemotherapy for a number of patients is the inability to eat because they throw up the food. It's been clearly shown in a number of cases that that using medical marijuana allows these people to eat and retain their food and keep their weight up. So that, and that obviously is important for their health and trying to overcome cancer. I don't believe that there's going to be very many patients. If you look at the, this law is sort of similar to what's been passed in Colorado. Colorado is about the same size as Minnesota, and roughly they have 200 to 400 people that are in that program. My guess is that that's what we're talking about in Minnesota, less than 1,000. Again, these are all individuals that will have a prescription from a physician. The bill has changed as it's gone through the five or six committees I've been in. The patients will, in this, the way the bill is now, will not be allowed to grow marijuana. They will have to get it from a organization which is state regulated. Then the organization will then supply the patient with marijuana at an amount you set in the bill. Certainly the bill is controversial. All the law enforcement agencies are opposed, although we did add a number of items that reduce our opposition, but we didn't reduce that opposition to zero, certainly. But I think it's those of us that have known people that were undergoing chemotherapy in certain cases, people that have MS, people that have other painful conditions, I think this helps them. And one of the persons actually that testified in the Senate this year has since died. So you're talking about a very small number of people, and I think this is a compassionate thing to do for them.
Any questions? Representative Swigum.
Mr. Chairman, thank you.
And again, your microphone, if you would, please.
Mr. Representative, thank you for carrying this bill. Members, I think this is an appropriate bill. I think it's the right thing to do. I've done minimal background research. It would tell me that it's both compassionate, but also the tightest bill in the country, Representative Huntley, and will not lead to any of the concerns which seem to come forward from other interest groups. I will tell you, while I strongly and passionately support your bill, Representative Huntley, I am very, very upset with the fiscal note we have before us. Members, if you look at the fiscal note and you look at the number of full-time equivalents in the year 2010 of 10 people, 10 people to manage a system that would be, well, Representative Huntley says less than 1,000 patients. I'm going to guess that it's going to be less than that. And a few organizations, either Representative Huntley, the Department of Health is greatly overestimating the number of full-time equivalents if they're necessary, or we are charging in this bill too much, the $100 for the new patients and the renewal patients, or the $1,000 for the registered organizations. We're charging too much for the patient to become a patient under this recommendation. It would not be a prescription because it's not FDA approved, but under the recommendation. One or the other is two. I'm very upset to look at a fiscal note that says 10 people necessary to manage this program of compassion, and it's going to be addressed one way or another before we pass it.
Representative Swigum, I think all of us have that same kind of concern that you've expressed, and that's why it was extremely important in the Finance Committee that we put on an ongoing review of that, and we strengthened that, I think, a little bit today as well, so that we have the legislative reviewing of the cost of that, both income and output. Representative Kahn?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Swigum, I'm very glad that you've agreed with the position that I've expressed often, most recently in the Conference Committee in State Government Finance, that sometimes a fiscal note, the most information you get from a fiscal note is whether the department wants to do it or not. And an out-of-line fiscal note, the most useful information there is that the department doesn't want to do it. It has nothing to do with the fiscal reality. And I would assure you, Representative Swigum, this is not the first fiscal note that we've seen this session, nor will it under, I don't want to pretend to be partisan, this is under many administrations that this has happened. So I completely agree with you, and I agree with the chair's control on it.
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Huntley. As you know, I have opposition to this bill based on the medical side of this, but for the Ways and Means portion, we'll just focus on the dollars and cents. Where is this marijuana going to come from that people purchase? And there's some stuff in here that says how these people get licensed and how much they can supply. Who are these folks that are going to be supplying patients with the marijuana?
Representative Huntley.
Well, these are organizations that will be regulated by the state. All the people involved in those organizations will have had very serious background checks to make sure that they have no criminal past, and they will be tightly regulated by the state so that it will be clear that any marijuana that they're growing is grown in a safe environment, and that the amount they're growing is directly proportional to the number of patients that they have signed up with their organization, and it will be regulated in such a manner that if any of the marijuana goes where it should not go, they will be subject to very severe penalties.
Representative Dean.
Mr. Chair and Representative Huntley, has any pharmaceutical company that you know of, does any pharmaceutical company in the country produce this?
The federal government does, actually. They have a program, I think, where they grow it in Louisiana, and they have a limited number of patients around the country that the federal government supplies marijuana cigarettes to. I think that program is so severely limited that it does not get this material to the number of people that need it. Again, we're not looking at large numbers of people, but there certainly are somewhat Representative Swiggum and I might disagree whether it's 1,000 or 500, I don't know. But this organization that supplies the marijuana will be tightly regulated, and will have severe background checks done on all their individuals or employees that are involved, and there are no pharmaceutical companies that do this, but the federal government does have a similar program.
Representative Dean.
And finally, Representative Huntley, how is the cost of this going to be set?
Representative Huntley.
For an individual, after he gets a prescription to get a permit, is roughly $100. And for the organization to be licensed, it's $1,000. And so all the money will be put in the state treasury, and the Department of Health will use that to oversee this process. And I certainly agree with Representative Swiggum that the department has greatly overestimated the number of people that are going to be involved in this.
A follow-up, Representative Dean?
Yeah. Mr. Chair and Representative Huntley, and what about the cost for the person purchasing the marijuana? How much does that cost, and how do we decide how much that is it by the ounce, and how do we figure out what the cost per ounce is?
Representative Dean or Representative Huntley.
I'm not sure how that's going to be set. Obviously, it will.
Excuse me, just a second. We have several side conversations, and it is being televised, so I'll be a little bit careful. Representative Huntley,
the cost of the production obviously will have to be reimbursed by the people that that get the prescription. And the payment scheme between the patient and the registered organization is, I don't think that's even discussed in the bill.
Okay. Representative Earhart?
I'll pass, thank you.
Any other questions, concerns? If not, then Representative Huntley renews his
Mr.
motion.
Chair.
Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Dean.
A roll call, I'm sorry.
Oh, sure. A roll call is requested. Representative Huntley renews his motion that Senate File 345, as amended, be recommended to pass. A roll call has been requested. The clerk will take the roll.
Solberg?
Yes.
Reinhart? Carlson?
Yes.
Clark?
Yes.
Dean?
Nope.
Eakin?
Yes.
Earhart?
No.
Riley? Gunther?
No.
Hillstrom? Hilty?
Yes.
Holberg? Huntley?
Yes.
Kahn?
Yes.
Kelleher?
Yes.
Winchesky?
No.
Mariani?
Yes.
McNamara?
No.
Murphy? Aaron? Murphy, Mary.
No.
Osment.
Yes.
Paulson.
No.
Pulowski, Sertich.
Yes.
Smith, Swiggum.
Yes.
Swales?
No.
Shumper?
Yes.
There being 14 ayes and 9 nays, the the bill is passed and referred to General Registry. Members, that's the extent of our agenda for today. I think we will probably be looking at a Friday meeting again. We'll try our best to let you know as soon as possible. I think so, yes. If there's a change in that, I will announce that as soon as possible. I don't know. But more than likely, morning, Representative Spink. Meeting is adjourned.